You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get, except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off.
What's up, everybody?
Oh,
that's not your line.
I didn't know where to go from there.
Long time listener, first time commenter, so on so forth. It's got a thing about the Microsoft thing, Price.
First time host.
How about I'll host this week?
Okay.
Maybe I should host this week. Here we go. What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop, episode 594. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining me this week is Tina Amini.
Hello, I'm back.
Sam Claiborne.
Hey, everybody.
And Justin Davis. Cool. And we've got a great show for you this week. We're going to talk about all the stuff Ubisoft announced today at its latest Ubisoft Forward. We're going to talk about what we've been playing, which is Tony Hawk for me, and I assume is Lord of the Rings Online for Justin.
Yeah, you assume correctly.
What, were you saying something, Sam?
I play Tony Hawk also. Surprise.
Cool. Perfect. But first, what a week it has been for Xbox. They finally announced the Xbox Series S, and we finally know the release date and price for both consoles. November 10th is when the next generation of Xbox kicks off. Series X, $500. Series S, $300. A full $200 cheaper. It's digital only, and actually doesn't seem like it's that much less powerful. It's basically what they're leading into. Correct me if I'm wrong. It's not 4K. It's 1440p that they're leaning into with the Series S. That's correct?
Yep. But it can scale to 4K on your 4K TV, and it plays media in 4K.
Wow.
Just not video games.
So are you guys surprised at the $200 price difference between these two consoles?
It makes the Series S really, really impressive and tempting. Yeah. I don't think it was something that many, you know, sort of really hardcore, really engaged gamers were like that super interested in. But once they saw the price and the specs, I've seen a lot of people sort of be like, well, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. And considering the times, it's well suited to kind of like navigate for both kind of gamers' needs. If you want the upscale, absolutely, you know, highest priced edition, sure, that's an option. But at the same time, if you're on a little bit more of a budget, seems super smart, especially just, you know, in this landscape of 2020.
It's kind of an interesting route because we know that, you know, most people don't have a 4K television. They probably won't for a while. And this will make your games look really good in your current television. It's a next gen system for $300. I mean, I think that's a really cool competitive move to make, especially now that they have a subscription service to back it up. And just like a few other things, you know, Xbox has going for it right now. What they don't have is a bunch of exclusive launch games.
So, yeah, it's funny that they held out this long. I mean, it makes sense, obviously, in the game of chicken, but this does seem like one of its greatest selling points, semi pun intended. So it's interesting that it's taken them this long, and obviously due to a leak initially before they owned the news themselves. But it's a huge differentiator, and definitely makes the deal between the two of them the most significant thing for Microsoft.
Yeah, the value proposition, right? Yeah.
The $500 version too is still like, you know, that's kind of what we expected. This, for some reason, I think it's really smart, not the delay, but that they kind of they talked about the S price at almost the same time, because like, that's all people are talking about. Like, we would be talking about the PS5 versus the Xbox price right now, as soon as PS5 comes out, but there's always going to be this $300 one in there. And people are like, well, you don't have to get the full one. It's just a really interesting move. I can't think of a precedent for.
And then they have that financing option too, right?
That's confirmed.
So yeah, that's just like another consumer-friendly option that is clearly like a big cornerstone point for their entire next-gen lineup.
Yeah, we should definitely talk about that. That's Xbox All Access, which allows you to get in on next-generation Xbox for as little as $25 a month for 24 months. So you're paying that over 2 years. And that also gets you Game Pass Ultimate. So you get all, you know, more than 100, you know, access to more than 100 games, plus every Microsoft first party game day one you get. So it's actually, it seems to be like just a staggering deal, especially if, like, what if Halo Infinite had been there at launch? $25 for $25, you got the new Xbox and Halo Infinite right on day one.
It's so unbelievable. Like, clearly there's going to be some of those games that you don't care about, but including every first party game and including EA games now, like, that's basically like a price cut. Like, you can imagine that console is $60 even cheaper than the PS5 is, because you don't have to pay $60 to get Halo Infinite. You know, it's just baked into the price of that subscription. It's amazing. It's really, really cool. I want to circle back on and really underscore something that Sam said earlier about the Xbox Series S. The thing that impresses me so much and that I think is so smart is that it really did focus in on resolution. Like, if you have a 4K TV, like, you know, we hope you seriously consider the Series X. But if you don't, if you're, you know, either plugging that thing into a monitor or you still have a 1080p TV, like, the fact that the Series S is pretty compromise-free, and that really that extra power is only being used to push, you know, these extra 4K pixels, and at lower resolutions, the games will look just as good. I think that was very, very clever and very savvy and, you know, consumer friendly. And like, I don't have enough positive things to say about like that being the point of differentiation between these two consoles. And like I don't actually have a 4K TV every year. Every Christmas, I say, this is the year. But then it's like, well, then there's OLED and then there's other new tech and there's HDR. And like every year I'm like, maybe I'll just wait one more year. And so, like, I'm still chugging away on my 1080p TV, you know, so it's like I'm one of those consumers. Like, so I know I've seen some people wondering, like, well, who doesn't have a 4K TV yet? It's like, well, you know, we exist for a wide variety of reasons.
I think it's like 70% of people that have consoles don't have a 4K TV.
Often use a projector, and people find that confounding.
I don't know why it's confounding.
Because it's not as great resolution. Like, you can still get a 4K projector, and I do, and like, you know, I have a really good setup, but ultimately it's totally lighting based. So if you're in a bright living room, it's kind of does not make for a great experience, but you can have a huge projector screen.
You have the biggest screen out of anybody. Yeah, I mean, it's huge.
Yeah, it's fun.
Wait, so Tina, do you do most of your gaming on a projector?
Pre-pandemic. Yeah, I used to. Yeah, now I'm more committed to a TV. 4K. Okay. TV.
So 500 for Series X, 300 for Series S. What's our best guess right now for what PS5 is going to come in on? Is there any way the physical disc, you know, the one that can use discs, comes in over $500?
I don't think so. I don't know, man. Like, I think like 500 is probably what they're targeting, and now they're thinking, since they have the ability to say whatever they want now, they can probably go for $450 for the digital one.
The digital one is actually the more interesting thing to me. I don't think there's any chance that the discless PS5 can reach $299. So I think on the low end, Microsoft.
Wouldn't that be amazing, though? That would be the console war firing back. As if they're like, oh, but you can just get a full PS5 for $300. You just don't get a
The higher end console is probably $499, but you know, depending on how much heat Sony's feeling or how much that console makes, maybe it's $599. But goodness gracious, it's really that lower end one where like I think Microsoft really got them. I don't think Sony was expecting that lower end Xbox to be $299.
I don't know if you can release. Go ahead, Tina.
I was just going to say there is a theory that they'd be operating at a loss at that point to deliver on that kind of price. And I would not be surprised if that were the case. So Sony would have to be willing to make the same kind of bet on their, you know, on their market and on how many PS5s and diskless PS5s that they would sell. And I'm sure their numbers will be up there, but it's a risk. It's a business risk at the end of the day.
Yeah, Phil Spencer told IGN earlier this year that he was confident they would be very competitive on price with next gen, and that he had the full backing of the bosses at Microsoft behind him. So like that kind of supports the idea that they're selling it at a loss.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think a lot of times console manufacturers, when they're in third place, as Xbox is, like it was so eye-rolly when they stopped reporting on the number of Xboxes sold, and they're like, well, we don't really think about our business that way. We care about, you know, monthly active users and how many people are using Game Pass. But it's like in this instance, I think that that there's a lot of truth to that. Because we see Game Pass on PC, for example, like it had this $5 a month, you know, price, like they seem to really genuinely be more interested in getting people into that ecosystem from any angle. Like, there's even xCloud in like the developing world, like, you know, that's going to be, you know, an ability to play these games without any hardware at all. You know, it's Game Pass. That's what they care about. How many millions of people can they get subscribed to Game Pass? And then the console is just an excuse to get Game Pass in people's homes.
Yeah.
Hey, there's like, you know, Tina had said like it's like there the Xbox like really knows the times, and like that's like a really smart reason to put out a cheap console because people were in a recession, and there's so many reasons why it'd be hard to convince your parents if you're a kid to get you a new system this year. But Xbox just kind of like laid all that out. They're like, you don't need to buy games. You can subscribe to this thing that's just like Netflix. You can play all your old games no matter what. You can play the games you buy this week on your Xbox. Like, Sony hasn't even answered some of those questions yet. So they've really tuned in to like really a pandemic console launch. I think that's amazing. It would have been good without a pandemic. I would have preferred, but they have a good strategy for that. If Sony goes 600, they're showing the exact opposite. That would be just like they did for the PS3.
Oof, yeah, you're right.
A generation ago, that was during, you know, it was a time where it was like times were tough and people couldn't buy a, you know, $500 system at that time. Like, this is like even in worse time. That'd be a crazy thing to go for. But I wouldn't put it past them. Like, I wouldn't be surprised. I just like would think it's a bad strategy.
Yeah, the Series S is such an attractive value, especially with the All Access. You take it home for $25 a month, access to a lot of really great games, all future first party stuff. I can see a lot of PlayStation gamers who have never owned an Xbox making that their second console. The PS5 will be their main, and then they also, you know, for all the exclusives, and then they have their Xbox Series S for playing a lot of great third party games and first party Microsoft stuff.
I do want to point out that every time we bring up All Access, and don't point this out, Seth Macy is rolling in his grave because he's not actually dead. I'm making a joke, but what you are doing is it is a loan. It is a credit loan, and you only get that $25 a month price if you qualify with a certain credit score. Like, there's like an army of fine print where like that's how it's going to work for some consumers, but for many other consumers, you know, they're not going to walk in and take an Xbox out for $25 a month and have it be that easy peasy. Like, you are taking out a line of credit with a bank. That's what Xbox All Access actually is.
But in turn, if you pay off your credit in time, it helps your credit score.
Yeah, that may be true.
Good to carry credit.
Yeah, we now have the fine print running across the screen, like, do not take financial credit advice.
Yes, please do not.
Hey, kids, be ready for having a good credit score out of college by getting an Xbox.
Yeah, All Access is amazing, to be sure, but I continue to see it as just sort of a vehicle for Game Pass, which is where the real, like, I just can't get over it. Like, if you planned on buying, you know, even if you don't love all their franchises, like if you like Gears and Halo, like that makes this console just hundreds of dollars cheaper than it would have been because you don't have to buy those games anymore.
I guarantee there are families that are inevitably going to buy two consoles anyway. So why not buy like the primary PS5 for the adults in the house and then the, you know, the budget Xbox Series S for your kids to play on some other 4K TV in your house?
Yeah.
Remember when there was different factions in the PS3 era console war where people would only get, they'd always have to have a Wii. And yeah. So they'd be like, I'm a PS Wii household or a Wii 60 household.
Yeah. Yeah.
There was like totally Wii thing. 60.
Yeah.
The Wii 60 movement was real.
So what's it going to be for Switch? You know, is it going to be the Switch Series X or Series yeah. S? Series Switch? Series Switch.
Switch box.
Yeah. You got the Switch box or you have, you know, the Switch S5.
Switch station.
Some people have also pointed out that, you know, $25 a month for 2 years comes out to $600. So double the price of just buying the Series S. But for that extra $300, that would only get you about four games at $70 next gen prices. So it's still a much better deal for, you know, if you can swing in the all access.
Yeah.
You get to keep the system at the end of that, right?
Yeah. But I don't know what happens if you like default or change your mind, because there's only certain retailers that are participating in that program, so you have to like they return the console to Walmart's or something. I don't know.
They send repossession officers to your house, and
Amazon is not offering the all access plan.
I mean, how do you think any retailer feels about selling a digital only console? Like, it's a little stab in GameStop's heart with each and every Series X that's sold.
GameStop just announced they're going to close hundreds more stores over its next fiscal year. Hundreds more.
Those stories were already happening before we couldn't go to stores anymore. And people haven't been able to go to stores for, you know, six months now. It's no surprise.
And GameStop's been doing curbside pickup, but it's not enough. Okay. Pre-orders for the Xbox Series, which I think I've seen people just start saying Xbox Series. And that covers both X and S.
You've seen that? It's okay to say that?
Yeah, Xbox Series. Pre-orders go live. What's that?
I just think I don't think I'll be able to get used to that, and it's boring.
So you want to say Xbox Series X and Xbox Series
S? I don't want to say any of that. I've always thought this titling is really stupid.
Series S and Series X.
Yeah.
I'm gonna say Xbox Series. Pre-orders go live September 22nd. It's less than 2 weeks away, which means we have to be less than 2 weeks away from Sony announcing price and release date for PlayStation 5. Because there's just no way Sony could allow their competitor pre-orders to go live without their potential customers knowing when and how much they can pay for a PlayStation 5, right?
Yeah. Go ahead.
People would buy it too many. You think people would go to Xbox because it exists as a pre-order and then spend their money and then not be able to play? That's like the theory there. I can see.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I agree. Like the game of chicken is, you know, it's finally over. Like it's over. You know, Xbox went first, but like now we get to see like the prophecy fulfilled and see how does Sony respond? Like it's kind of interesting. Like Damon, I think you're completely right. If Sony thinks they stack up. If they think they stack up favorably, they have to go out now, right? They have to go out before those pre-orders open. But if they feel the heat and can't get their console to $500, if they have a $599 console, maybe they wait.
Buyers right now.
Yeah, I don't know.
Love it. Love it.
It is very exciting times. Not everyone is as excited as we are. For example, Eric from Mexico City writes us to say, longtime listener here, with Microsoft finally having announced the price and release date of their new consoles over a tweet. Tweet is all capital. This new console launch is starting to feel very anticlimactic. We waited so long to hear something from either Sony or Microsoft, and we just get a tweet. Are you guys hyped for the new consoles, or should Microsoft and Sony be doing a better job at getting us excited?
Well, we missed the boat in some ways because it felt like we would have known the information by now. It would have been disseminated through some sort of fancy press conference. You know, it would have been a drum roll moment and then a bunch of gasps in a physical audience. But we weren't going to get that no matter what this year. And then there was a bunch of other complications that probably pushed is probably the reason why those announcements were pushed off. And then unfortunately for Microsoft, for Xbox, like their announcement was unceremoniously revealed before they had an opportunity to. But I actually think they played it pretty well, at least their first tweet, which was that meme.
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah.
With that was like a puppet looking.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, it was very playful. It was very like human and genuine. And then they, you know, behind the scenes scrambled to make sure that they could get all of their official materials up to speed, because at that point you might as well just speak to it. We're like two months out from this thing releasing, shortly, you know, a short amount of time away from the pre-orders going up. So I'm sure they were close to it anyway at that point, and they figured they might as well own that part of the news cycle and confirm it. So yeah, it's a little bit unfortunate of a year and for many, many reasons, but I think they did the best with the multiple circumstances that hit their lap as they could.
Yeah. We'll see if, PlayStation has, you know, tries to make more of an event, like, you know, tells people to tune in for a live broadcast of something like a PlayStation Direct style.
For this, blame Nintendo, because they went with directs way before press conferences, stopped worldwide. They've been doing this digital thing forever. Now, I know just getting a tweet seemed absurd. I think they were maybe a little rushed by that leak by that point. Yeah. But I think like they also were on the heels of the Halo delay and a bunch of like negativity around that. But like we always try to read comments and Reddit and try to like see what the vibe is out there. And boy, did positivity start happening right when that S price and stuff came out. And there's just a little bit, I don't like saying this word, but the narrative is a little bit different now. That's like their full intention. So whether like we're not hyped, like they also turned, you know, a little bit of negativity into like pretty much like, oh, let's wait and see, and positivity, which is a big thing to do.
Yeah. There's definitely no denying that, like, it's a little bit of an anticlimax and has been a little bit bungled, whether, you know, it's fair or not. Like, you know, the world is in a really interesting state right now. Like, I've been doing this for 15 years. Jesus. I've never seen a more hype moment in my life than E3 with PS4. We're like, here's the price. Here's the date. You can pre-order it right now. Like, go. I've never seen anything like that. And like now, to have regressed to the state that we're in now of like, it comes out in a tweet at like 2 a.m. and it was all leaked. And, you know, like it doesn't feel great, but we're going to live with these consoles for a long, long time. And like ultimately they're going to come out, and none of that really matters beyond, you know, beyond just sort of the moment to moment gamesmanship of it.
Yeah.
But also, the PS4 had the advantage of, you know, the Xbox One starting off on the wrong foot. So they had this, they had this literal mic drop in the end moment that was set up for them. They were set up to bat long before they even needed to make their big splashy announcement. So I think that helped with some of the anticipation, and it was a bit of like a sigh of relief too, from consumers just thinking like, oh yes, this is what we wanted. Sony is listening to us, and I think Microsoft is now trying to re-own that part of the narrative too.
Yeah.
You know what I like about console reveals that was only done by Xbox this time, but has been done by Nintendo a lot before, is when they show the system really early and like a little mock-up model or whatever, and that's like the first beat, and then you like kind of see more pictures of it, but you don't know what's in it and stuff. Like I always like that feel of it, and that's why like Sony's one this year was like a little bit out of whack for me, because it was like, oh, we didn't really see it till way into the summer, and I always like that reveal. So once those two things were revealed, my hype was kind of like, okay, I don't know, I just really like the visual part of it and following that. But and of course,
kind of a marketing beat, because technically the first thing we saw of the PS5 was like a loading screen for Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
actually,
and Xbox did show the tall, you know, the beer can system early on, which is really funny.
It's just dawning on me, you know, right now that I haven't made up my mind yet, and that's really unusual. Like, I usually know, like, I'm gonna have to buy every console, and I'm gonna want to buy every console because I'm an enthusiast, but like, PS4 was like clearly my lead console last generation, like heads and tails, right? And like, I don't really have a sense of that yet for PS5 versus Xbox. Like, I don't know if I'm buying them both this fall. Like, my mind is actually not made up. So I wonder if there's a lot of other undecideds out there on this particular topic.
We'll have to do another poll.
Yeah,
we should do another poll. Right now I'm thinking PS5 and then Series X All Access.
Yeah,
that's what I'm thinking right now.
You would do the subscription? I was wondering if anybody in this group would do the subscription. I mean,
it almost, it's like if you can, I don't know why you would just buy the console and then you also have to buy Game Pass Ultimate on top of that. And then you have to buy all those games.
It's more money to buy the console.
Yeah.
Before we move on, I've granted your wish. I ran a poll this morning that was called, now that we know a little more about pricing on the next-gen consoles, which do you think you're most likely to buy? All right, so our audience today, the 17,000 votes are in, say 50.8%. It just changed in real time in front of me. Wow, that was amazing. 50.8% say PlayStation 5 standard. 13% say PlayStation 5 digital edition. So that's a total of about 64% PlayStation. And then Xbox Series X is 29.8% and Series S is 5.9%. So about 36% Xbox then. So that's up. It was about 30 before, and so like really that like 6% boost is coming from Series S, which is exactly what it's got. But that's kind of neat.
Yeah, that's great. Good data.
Before we move on, I would like to know why what Sam's problem with the word narrative is.
I like that when we're talking about actual narratives, because you know I'm a lit major and I like that and everything. I don't like it when it's used as like it's basically a substitute for the word lie or when it's used in politics, you know, like, oh, we're going to stick to the narrative.
It's
like
it's got a negative connotation to it as if it's not the real story. It's the story that you are prepared to tell, the PR clarified story. But I think narrative, when you're talking about like community conversations, is more zeitgeist, which I know a lot of people don't like that word either. I think because it's like a stuffy sounding word, but hey, it's appropriate and fitting in the definition.
It is.
Yeah, it's also a replacement for, like, you know, the discussion around the news becomes the news more than the news, which is a little bit like, well, this has more hype and momentum behind it. And I'm like, well, yeah, but what's the substance of, like, what's actually being said?
We can just rename Twitter narrative.
What would be the name for individual tweets?
Tibbs? Narrates.
I like Tibbs.
Did you see my Tibbs this morning, Damon?
Tibbs is much more like the appropriate, like, you know, social media shorthand. Yeah. I like that.
Ooh, I like this. I'm going to re-Tib this.
All right. I'm going to slide to your Tibbs later.
No, that's you want to slide into your
box. You slide into the box.
Your DTs, your directives. Okay.
Direct narratives.
Okay. Okay, earlier today we got another Ubisoft Forward where they announced a bunch of new stuff. They sort of relaunched the game that was formerly known as Gods and Monsters, now known under the objectively worse title, Immortals Phoenix Rising, Phoenix spelled in a really silly way.
I can barely remember the old name now. It's all Phoenix to me.
But I do think the game looks pretty fun, and it looks like a Sammy game.
It totally is a Sammy game because it's just a Breath of the Wild clone. And it really is. Like, they showed a lot of gameplay today where it was like, you know, you use a scanner to kind of look at the distance, you drop a pin, and then you float off a really high thing for a long time and get down in there and fight stuff. And then it has a little bit of the graphical style. None of that is a negative for me. But it is for some of the other people on staff that I've talked to. They think it looks like generic Zelda, which I totally get. If it doesn't feel like it's its own thing. And boy, I watched all that footage today, like, really intently, because I wanted to see, like, oh, is the Greek gods part of this going to be interesting? And I got to say, like, I grew up, my dad is a Greek translator, a classical Greek translator, and teaches ancient Greek. And like, I grew up in that, you know, him talking about that pantheon and stuff like that. And I really like it. And it's really familiar to me and cool. So that's something I'm also attracted to. But yeah, I'm hyped.
Tina, what'd you think?
I did not see it because I've been in meetings all day, but I did peep the trailer for Prince of Persia. So I'll get back to you on that one. The name thing is silly. That's all.
Well, if you just picture Breath of the Wild in your mind, you're very close to picturing.
Yeah, apparently. I'm surprised by that.
Phoenix.
You know what's funny? Go ahead.
Even from the materials I've seen, it doesn't scream Breath of the Wild to me, but obviously there was like a pretty extensive gameplay showcase apparently associated with the rebranding trailer and whatever else. So
yeah,
sounds like mechanically it is.
In that gameplay overview, the developer at one point even says, Immortals Fenyx Rising is heavily inspired by Greek mythology. But in my head, I just heard heavily inspired by Breath of the Wild.
It's also a go anywhere from the start of the game. Like the map is instantly accessible anywhere, and it's based on a stamina meter, which is involved in climbing and everything. But they extend the stamina meter in this game to be in like part of fighting, which is a little bit in Zelda too. So it really is. It's a Breath of the Wild inspired game. And if Breath of the Wild, becomes a genre, I'm of course fine with that. But again, what if they add in what Breath of the Wild absolutely didn't have was a story. It had nothing to draw you into characters or anything. It had a great world building, which for me is better than a story. But this game has conversations and dialogue. In our preview, the writer Cam Shea, who read it, just loved it. He thought it was really funny. He thought the gods had really good conversations with your character. And it's really weird because you build your character from scratch in this game, but everything you see for it is a woman. They keep showing this one model of, which is funny. But today they showed like how you can design your characters. You can be like totally, totally crazy character designer too.
As long as there's no weapon breaking system.
Oh boy,
I don't know about weapon breaking actually. Now that I think about it.
Yeah, I want to add on to what Sam was saying. Like, if there were a million and one games and open world games are completely, subsumed by this Breath of the Wild style, go anywhere, climb anything, like, this would feel worse. But, like, no one else has really tried. And, like, so why, like, Breath of the Wild sold, 22 million copies, won every award that there is to win, absolutely made a stamp on the industry. And then every other developer looked at it and said, nah. We're fine. We're fine with just having invisible walls everywhere, and we don't need to let our players climb anything or have that level of freedom. So it's like, it's great. Like, I'm glad that someone else is finally kind of trying to build on that and iterate on it. Like, my level of personal goodwill for one developer sort of biting off another and sort of copying them a little bit is informed by like how widespread it becomes. Like, we have a million and one, Metroid likes, but there's not that many Zelda likes out there. And so I'm happy to see other, other talented teams giving it a shot until, if it becomes super saturated, my opinion might change.
Yeah. I think actually Ubisoft got close to that before with Assassin's Creed Odyssey. My memory of that is that you can climb pretty much anything in that game. But I agree with Sam. Immortals Fenyx Rising looks fun. I'm definitely gonna play it, but man, the trailer that they showed today, the music was so tonally off from I think it was just a total miss of the mark. It's like they're playing pop. It was like a remix of a funky James Brown song, and the lyrics were "I got ants in my pants."
Yeah, I thought that was really strange.
And that's how they re-revealed the game.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's coming this year. Immortals Fenyx Rising is out December 3rd. Now we can go to the Prince of Persia Sands of Time remake. This is a game that I played back in the day. I think I played it on PS2. Did anyone else play the original game?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
On GameCube.
Yeah.
GameCube.
So I think it was on everything, Xbox as well. Tina, did you play the original?
I think I played like an hour or two. It was one of those borrowing moments of my childhood.
I remember liking the game. I haven't really thought about it a whole lot over the last 17 years, but is it cool that they're remaking of any game Ubisoft could remake of any Prince of Persia? Is this a cool one to pick?
It's the beloved one. You know what's funny is that it's Ubisoft in their promo of this, they said it was their first remake ever in Ubisoft company history. So if you think about it, they've done remasters, but not remakes. That's the we did an interview, and our interviewer Brendan followed up, and I was talking to him about it a little bit. But yeah, that's what they're claiming. I didn't do the research, but he looked into it a little bit, and he's a great list based encyclopedic person. So I thought that was an interesting tidbit.
Hmm. It's cool they have the same voice actor coming back to re-record dialogue.
The main voice actor that I saw, but then the others just aren't.
Well, they only mentioned the prince.
Yeah.
Most online, like everything that I'm seeing, everyone's very disappointed that the game doesn't look better.
It doesn't look like it. It's not like a Resident Evil 2 remake graphical leap, right?
it's current gen.
Yeah, yeah.
Our producer Borba says the princess was recast, the voice actress.
Okay. Thank you, John. I think that it looks like, you know, current gen for one part, and I know it'll be, you know, they said you can play it on the next systems, so that just doesn't mean it's being upscaled or anything. But it has it's weird because they showed all this mocap and it looked like really good mocap, and they showed acting and stuff. But then, like, when I actually saw the characters' faces and stuff, it just looks a little bit Uncanny Valley to me. Like, it looks like they're trying to go like between cartoony and realism, and it doesn't look great. But then at the end of that trailer, they show outdoor environments, like a bunch of like fantasy palaces, and I was like, yes, that's what I'm interested in.
Yeah,
when you think of remake, at least, you know, of recent times, Final Fantasy VII comes to mind. I think that was the last remake we got. Mm-hmm. And like, that's a huge difference. Mm-hmm. And obviously, like, different circumstances there. You know, who knows how long the production time is between the two of those games. So kind of an unfair comparison to make. But in general, I think like it looks it. If you weren't told that it was a remake, would you think it was a remake or a remaster?
Exactly. Yeah. It looks like a nicely done remaster.
Yeah.
Like we've complained about this on the show before. We're like, remake and remaster is so fuzzy and can mean any number of things. You know, like Final Fantasy VII Remake at one end of the spectrum, like just completely redone and blown up and re-envisioned. And, you know, Resident Evil fits into that bucket too.
But yeah, Link's Awakening is one that I always think of too. It's just like, wow, that's a remake.
And so I think remake has like sets a certain expectation level that like remaster doesn't. My perspective is that like, yeah, like, you know, measured up against those games, I completely understand people's disappointment, but like, you know, I still think about it as a game from 2003 that I liked quite a bit. And like, it feels like they're just sticking a little more closely to like, to the original vision. 2003,
2002. I think it's 2003. Yeah. 17 years ago.
I was talking about this earlier, Rutina. There was this funny quote, which was had it said that they had fixed a couple of things, including camera and like it was like this list, and I was like, that's exactly what people wanted for Mario. Yeah. So I don't want to go too far into the like, you know, this is bad news for Prince of Persia fans. It isn't. Like, they spent a lot of time hopefully fixing things that were wrong with it that I think we all wish, you know, were fixed in a bunch of the games that were just announced from Nintendo's porting.
There's definitely an element of like, you know, Nintendo did literally nothing at all to Mario 64. It's the exact same game, and it's one of my favorite games ever made, but you know, the camera's bad. Like, there's stuff about that game that like would be nice to be fixed. And yet Ubisoft does try to go in and fix this stuff and gets more heat than just, they're catching more flack than if they would have just, you know, up-resed and ported the original game.
They said they added some puzzle stuff, which I think is cool because that game had some kind of puzzles that they used a lot or you get really stuck on and stuff. That was good. But the thing I was also remembering now is that they also, you know, that game's famous for a rewind feature. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, that was like kind of technologically impressive at the time too. And that's just another thing that's like, I know we demand when we're playing retro games now is like, include your rewind feature. I just think it's funny that's a part of that game. But it would be great if you put out, Nintendo would never do this, but maybe they do it with an easy mode or something. But it'd be really cool to play a platformer like Mario Sunshine or 64 with a rewind. That would be really neat, and it would take some of the annoyance out and let you practice a lot.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, Sands of Time is that the remake is out in January after next-gen consoles are out, but not being made for next-gen consoles.
Or Switch.
Yeah, well.
Play them with backward compatibility, so.
Yeah, you could probably do that. I don't know, maybe as with so many of these remakes that are announced, maybe it'll come to Switch later on down the line.
Yeah.
I don't know. We keep hearing those rumors that Nintendo is asking developers to prepare their games for 4K for the Switch.
Oof, yeah, that was another bump to that rumor this week, right?
Yeah, yep, exactly. The Scott Pilgrim game, which disappeared from stores years ago, is getting sort of relaunched, coming back this holiday. So that's cool. But if you bought it before, you do have to buy it again.
That game ruled. I can't believe they got the rights to the soundtrack and the license and all that stuff sorted out to have that game come back.
That's just like a brawler with really, really awesome pixel art and music. Very cool game. They gave us an update on Watch Dogs. It's in its post-launch content, it's getting Aiden Pierce, the protagonist from Watch Dogs 1.
Well, he's so like He's so iconic, Damon.
I know. Yeah. So beloved. When we talked about who should be on video game Mount Rushmore, it was definitely Aiden Pierce and then right. Mario.
Yeah. Yeah. And then of course the main character from Watch Dogs 2.
That guy. I actually liked the first Watch Dogs. So I don't hate on that game. I just thought it was,
I liked the second one because it was fun to drive around the Bay Area in it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm excited for Watch Dogs Legion too. I'm at least excited to see how the, you know, take control of any character plays out.
But it seems like a really evil thing to do.
What? Well, you're convincing them. You're not taking over them. They're like minds against their will. You're convincing them to join your cause, Sam.
Plus, you're breaking them out of their usual NPC cycle where they just go to one star.
Well, if you think of them as NPCs, then it's not so evil.
Yeah,
exactly.
But even if you agree to be like, oh, yeah, you can take over my mind anytime. That's, first of all, something you should never agree to. I've seen Black Mirror. That's at least 5 out of 6 episodes one season were about that. And also, if you agree to that still, like sometimes you're just like, you know, enjoying your matcha tea. It's a nice summer day. And then what? You have to go like, you know, be killed at the Tower of London. It seems ridiculous to me. I think that's too much.
For a worthy cause.
Hopefully. My theory is that you're evil in this game.
You are just, you're the people, though. You are Legion.
Well, the people are evil, that's for sure.
Finally, Ubisoft announced a new game, Riders Republic, I guess spiritual successor to Steep, a massively multiplayer extreme sports game.
Is it?
It's not open world.
It is.
It's different locations in America.
Well, you have huge exploration areas. I don't know if you can call it exploration. It's basically like 5 Woohoo Islands. That's how I describe it.
Okay.
Remember
okay.
Pilot Wings? And Wii Sports Resort. This looks like Pilot Wings to me.
I don't know if I got a Pilot Wings 5.
Did you see the jetpacks? Did you see the hang gliders?
Yeah.
Tell me why it's not like Pilot Wings.
Because Pilot Wings is a solitary experience and not quite as goofy.
As soon as you add in multiplayer, Damon's out. I know. And I am too, usually. But they do have a big multiplayer component to this. But I really don't like extreme sports or sports of any variety. But I do like Pilot Wings. And I liked Wii Sports Resort. And I like the idea of like having a big open area to do kind of aeronautic based tricks and stuff like that. I think that's cool.
Well, they showed this footage of just like, you know, dozens or if not, you know, probably not hundreds, but dozens of like bicyclists going down a mountain and people crashing. So I thought maybe it was going to be a battle royale at first, but they never said those words. They just call it massively multiplayer. Mm-hmm. It just seems Ubisoft seems unique among the bigger publishers and just like how many different new types of games and projects they're willing to just throw against the wall and see what sticks, right? Because like last year at E3 they announced that Roller Champions, they're like roller derby game. Mm-hmm. Right,
they talked about that more today too.
Well, it's still not officially out yet, I don't think, unless they surprise launched it today. I don't know, I didn't
yeah but it's not like they haven't swept it under the rug like they have with Skull and Bones, which they did post about this week.
Yeah, there's also Skull and Bones, and then there's Hyperscape, their battle royale that they just launched. I don't know.
I think that kind of goes to show you like what it's like. Ubisoft is such a weird company. They're based worldwide, and they have so many teams, and a lot of those teams work on one project together, and then I think they all have pet projects. And man, when you're at Ubisoft, you must be thinking like when For Honor was being shown, and I was like, oh yeah, this game is, you know, you can attack people in groups, and it's kind of sluggish and stuff. They said today is 25 million players. That game is going so strong. If you can take bets like For Honor and then have it be like a giant game that lasts forever, like you're going to start taking bets on other things, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Riders Republic is out February 25th, which is just days after Far Cry 6. Let's share what we've been playing. Sam and I have been playing Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 and 2 Remastered. I've been having a good time with it. I don't know about you, Sam.
I have. I've never played those games. I've discovered that I haven't played those games enough to know what I'm doing at all. And I remember playing them, you know, with friends and my friends being really good at them. And so I hated them. And so then now when I'm playing by myself and I'm trying to learn, I'm just awful. I went through the tutorials, I unlocked the school, and I know what I'm doing. But like, I also have this other thing working against me. I wrote the strategy guides for the skate games, and I got really good at those, like super good. And everything in my muscle memory is just totally screwing with me when I play Tony Hawk. But I get it. It's so fun. Combos are great. I don't know how to do them. If I knew how to play this game, it'd be the best. And I'm working on it. I'm learning.
That's funny you say that, because I actually didn't ever play the skate games, but I played a lot of Tony Hawk 1 through 3. So my muscle memory is just like slowly starting to come back. It felt familiar right away, but I just have to sort of like relearn how to do everything. For me, it's all about grinding and then connecting grinds. So you manual from like, you know, grindable object to grindable object, keep your combos going.
It really bothers me that you have to do the teeter totter when you're manualing.
But you can
grinding for a long time.
But you can pump stat points into your balance to where you don't even have to worry about it eventually.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, that's a really good tip.
There you go.
And this is this week's episode of Damie's Tips.
I also just don't really make games like that anymore. It's so arcadey. I love the whole concept of it. You have 2 minutes to complete as many objectives.
Yeah,
as you can.
I didn't remember like that. It is funny. It's like putting in a quarter.
Yeah, it's great. I love it. Yeah. Jess, I know you've played Tony Hawk games in the past, but you're still just playing Lord of the Rings Online.
Yeah, I do want to check out the Tony Hawk remaster, but for a little bit, like the first one that I owned and like really played a lot of was 3. And I played 1 and 2 at friends' houses, but like 3 and 4 and those maps and like, you know, that was Alcatraz and like that era, like that's my memories. And so I want to play 1 and 2 to like, you know, close this gap and like, you know, see how it compares to 3 and 4, which I'm really fond of. Not played it
yet. Get excited for Warehouse and School, because that's where I've been playing.
I do remember school at my buddy's house a lot. You know, everybody does. Yes, I am still playing Lord of the Rings Online. It's a little bit hard to describe where I am or what I'm doing. I'm following off on the game follows the plot of the book and then doesn't, and then deviates and invents its own characters and its own scenarios. And I'm sort of off doing a new thing now where a new villain, I'm trying to thwart her, and she had a Palantir, and she's trying to use the Palantir to get one of the minor rings of power, which it's crazy. Like, even the lesser rings are still crazy powerful and lets her like enthrall the minds of everyone around her and all this crazy stuff. So we have to stop her from finding this minor ring of power. And last night I pulled off a little heist and took the Palantir. She doesn't have it anymore.
Is it a dwarven ring?
It's just one of the lesser rings. Like, it's not even one of the dwarven rings. It's just a lesser magic ring of power. Like, you know, it's not even like a numbered, like one of the 9 given to men or anything like that.
3,000 rings to rule them all.
Yeah, basically.
To wield that power now?
I don't have the ring yet. I think it's unlikely that I'll be allowed to wield that power.
They're all evil.
Yeah, they are all incredibly evil. So that's going to delay. That's like this long sort of epic quest line that's going to stop me from getting into Moria, but I'm going to get there eventually. The game does this thing, and I say it with love. Every MMO does this, where like expansions come out every 2 years or so, and they have to kind of tread water and fill time in the meantime. And I'm at the point where they were adding things to the game before the Moria expansion came out. And so, like, that's where they invented this whole storyline, this whole plot line, while they were working on Moria. And so I have to sort of grind my way through that quest line before I sort of get back on track.
You all write in and say the 3 elven rings are evil, I know. But if Sauron gets the One Ring, then the elves will be powerless because he betrayed them by creating the One Ring to be able to control them. But I know, until he gets it, they're probably fine.
They're all right.
Well, that's good to know.
They were created without his control. He just ended up, you know, binding the One Ring to them.
Tina, you just had a week off. Did you play any video games?
Started Marvel's Avengers. So I'm not super far in. I think maybe I played like 2 or 3 hours, so I'm a little ill-equipped to pass judgment. But I did frustration quit at one point. So that's kind of the current status of where I'm feeling about that game. Yeah, so basically there's this scene where you have to pull a lever, and then you pull that lever, or you like flip a switch or something, and then a bunch of enemies come out, and then you got to like go across the other side of the room and flip that switch, and a bunch of enemies come out, and then you got to go back to the first switch and do it all over again. And at that point I was like, nope, gotta go. I can't do this right now. So yes, frustration quit about 3 hours, 2 hours in. I hear that the general consensus seems to be that single player is good, and the multiplayer is kind of where the issues come into play in terms of the grindiness.
It's all that Switch. That's all multiplayer is.
Well, if that's the case, I very much agree with that assessment. But apparently it's a lot of, there's just a lot of different currencies. And so there's a lot of confusion around it. And then, yeah, the grindiness, which is unfortunate because the thing I was most looking forward to about this game is the multiplayer. Because it feels like a good excuse to hang out digitally with friends. Like I'm actually genuinely considering picking up Destiny 2 all over again, just for that purpose alone, if you guys want to play.
We're all playing Final Fantasy 14, so you should just play that with us instead.
That's a fair point. We'll trade off week by week.
I also want to give a shout out to Overcooked and Overcooked 2, which me and my whole family are playing, and it's very cute.
That's fun.
Including the three-year-old. She insists on having, you know, a Joy-Con in her hands herself. Half the time she's holding it upside down.
Yeah, that's like my two-year-old nephew. He always wants to take the controller. I'm like, but you don't know what to do with it.
Yeah. In the case of Overcooked, like, she can't do anything because she's three, but she's old enough to know if we've given her a decoy controller, and then she gets really mad. So we have to actually put her in the game, and then she just sort of stands in the corner the whole level.
Well, it's like an extra challenge.
Yeah, and then it's like, depending on if my wife and I are in a good mood, you know, it's like, it's fun, and, you know, we're not making any progress, but then it's like, if we had like a stressful day or whatever, we're like shouting at our six-year-old, like, why? You were supposed to be chopping the fish. Come on. Like, oh, I hit the wrong button. I'm sorry. So it's a real test.
I would say corner two.
It's a real test of familial bonds.
Yeah. Tina, last week, Sam and I were agreeing that we thought Kamala Khan was just a very likable character. We're a little bit surprised by that.
Yeah, everybody seems to have that same opinion. So far, she seems nice as a character. Again, super early in. I do like one thing that's very cool is if you turn subtitles on in the single player game, they actually narrate some of her actions. Mm-hmm. And it's like a comic book would. So there's a lot more text in there than you'd expect from normal subtitle reading. So that part is very cool.
Should her comic Ms. Marvel just start with issue one? It got, you know, it's like maybe 5 or 6 years old now, and it's just the best. It's one of the best comics I've read, maybe ever. Actually, that entire run, it's just really, really great.
Let's check in with the listeners.
Hey, listeners!
You said we weren't doing that this week.
I've never said that, listeners. Remember, you can always reach us at the email address gamescoop@IGN.com, just like Jay from Buffalo did. And Jay from Buffalo says, Omega Cops, I've heard so many people online talking about buying several copies of Mario 3D All-Stars and leaving them sealed. This has become a practice that has really become more common in gaming. As someone that was a huge baseball card collector during the 90s with thousands of pounds of low-value cards, do you think that all this collecting of video games now is going to really limit the value of these games? It makes sense that sealed copies of NES, SNES, GBA, etc. games are so valuable because most gamers opened their games, tossed the boxes, and played them. Thanks.
That's correct. The idea there is that if you are making something for collectors, then it's not collectible. By that point, you know, there's a market that's being filled, and the people that buy those are all holding on to them and not opening them. Like that's the opposite of what makes something collectible. You need a time machine. But what you need to do is figure out what the thing is right now that's cool, it's niche, that's like just not super popular, and you know, it's limited because people aren't buying it. It's limited, and people that are buying it are enjoying it, and that's like the real secret. As soon as things become, you know, planned collector's editions and stuff like that, they're just not. That's just a contradictory, you know, aspect of them.
It's a little bit of a mind trick. Well, like Nintendo said, they're not. What this is they said they're not selling the game after March 31st, which I was trying to think that has never happened before. Like collector's editions can run out, like, you know, other things, but to just be like, we are not going to sell you this game after 6 months. I think
but they don't tell you, right? They just stop producing it.
They just stop producing it. And so it's a little bit of a magic trick that Nintendo pulled. We're like, they're going to have 20 million copies of Mario 3D All-Stars, but only for 6 months versus games that they never say they're going to stop making them, but they only made a million of them. You know, they only made 500,000 copies of these weird esoteric Switch games. But no one, you know, no one goes gaga over those. So I don't think that this game is. I think that's a mistake. Yeah. Anyone thinking that they're going to that's going to be a wise investment for them.
Yeah.
The general collector's rule there being that, like, anytime it's made for collectors, it's not collectible anymore. I think TY, the Beanie Babies, is a perfect example of that, where like people were going crazy over them. But then suddenly when people start to think like, oh, there's value here, and they started collecting them, that's when the prices went down. I still have a couple tagged TY Beanie Babies that are useless now. And at the time, they were like priceless and rare.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you get the Princess Di one or the Grateful Dead one? Those are the ones I remember that were worth a lot of money.
No, I have like this like praying golden bear. I don't know. It was like I think it's called Hope or something. And it was very like it was very coveted at the time.
Yeah.
I think for like $3.
There are things that come out now that are popular that will have such a limited run. Like if it's a, you know, a giant franchise like Zelda and there's a limited run of the collector's editions, those collector's editions always end up being worth money. That's not the case, you know, for large genres of things. So that's like a very targeted collector market there.
A couple of things I want to point out. One, I was bagging on All-Star Collection last week a little, and I stand by those criticisms. But one thing is Mario Sunshine is very, very hard and expensive to play legitimately. You know, Galaxy's not very rare. Mario 64 is not very rare at all, and it's been ported. But Sunshine, that the only way to play it is with a GameCube disc. That's expensive. You know, it's expensive and hard to get. So I do understand the appeal of All-Star, you know, for that alone, just from the perspective of, like, if people have gaps in their gaming history. So, you know, like, there's I've come around a little bit on All-Star where I'm like, maybe it does make sense to have this thing for $60. If you're going to have to pay $60 to play Sunshine by itself.
Yeah.
The other point I was going to make is that it's the second. So Amazon publishes bestseller lists, just like the New York Times bestseller list. They have the best-selling books and music and games of 2020. And in just this one week of pre-orders, Mario All-Stars is the second best-selling video game of the year on Amazon, behind only Animal Crossing. So,
Go Nintendo.
Amazing, go Nintendo, but B, like, all the more reason to not believe that it's going to be remotely collectible.
That's a good point.
I'm also known for not opening things in boxes, but I really recommend you buy video games to open, in addition to other forms of media. I think media should be opened, and I just think some things are fun to put on your desk in a box, because the box is pretty. I think that's nice.
Tina, last week we were saying, Justin and I were a little disappointed with Super Mario 3D All-Stars, just the fact that they're just ports, not remakes, not even really remasters. Not fixing things like the camera in Mario 64. There's no sort of extra special features, museum-like features that you've seen in other games like the SNK 40th Anniversary Collection. And then Sam was just super excited to have it. So what was your take?
Yeah,
Choose a side.
Well, I think Nintendo gets away with a lot in a lot of situations, and we've been operating with zero intel from them, zero announcements for so long that just in general, hearing a big splash of announcements and especially from beloved series, like, that's often enough for a lot of people to get excited. Nintendo's always also operated really slowly in the sense of coming around. Like, look how long it took us to get Nintendo Online, for instance, when that was already like this completely set precedented thing in the industry. It's just for them to finally come on board with some of the other things the rest of the industry is doing, like, makes a really big impact for them because it's new for them. So I'm excited to play games I haven't played before. Same with like Prince of Persia. I only got to play a few hours, and now this is the perfect excuse because it'll be topical and related to my job. So two birds, one stone, essentially. So on a personal level, excited. On a more industry community level, I can see why Nintendo gets a little bit of leeway that maybe Sony and Microsoft don't.
Yeah, that was very fair. Very fair.
I picked both sides.
Okay, that brings us to Video Game 20 questions. But before we get into it, I can hear someone's phone buzzing as if they're getting texts or notifications, and I can see the YouTube comments already. Some people will find that annoying. Too.
It's not mine.
It might be Sam's.
I'll put mine on my knee. It's not
mine. Okay.
Yeah, it's vibrating on the table.
It's probably John. I'm just giving you a hard time, John.
Our suggestion, our 20 question suggestion this week comes from Jabari in Minneapolis. Let the questioning begin.
Minneapolis. It's very cold in the winter. Very cold there.
Hmm.
Does this game have snow in it anywhere?
I was going to say that too. A snow
level. Really?
So many games have snow levels.
Yeah.
Stand by.
To be fair, a lot of snow levels are forgettable.
Yeah.
How would you figure that out? Like, if I had to Google any game I know, I guess I would look.
The answer is yes.
It's got snow. Snow confirmed.
Yep.
Nice. Good work. Is this from before the year 2000?
No.
Is it current gen?
Is it current gen? Is that what you asked?
Yeah.
No.
Is this game three-dimensional?
No.
2D game.
Cool. Would you call this an indie game?
No. That's five.
Wow. Okay. So some big first party 2D game.
Yeah, could be. Is it part of a franchise?
Yes.
Wait, why first party?
Castlevania, yeah.
Why?
Because it's not it. I didn't mean first party so much. I meant third party if I said first party, but it's just like, you know, it's like from a big publisher.
Okay. Is there I wanted to say like fighting involved, but is that too vague? Is there fighting involved?
Is there fighting?
Yeah, I'm thinking like brawling or a fighting game style combat.
Well, that's a different question.
I want to know if you defeat enemies by a method other than jumping on their head. That's what I want to know. Not to take over your question, Tina, but I don't know if it's...
No, I was going in the combat direction. You specified it.
There might be.
And you seem to have landed on a good one.
There's probably other ways to defeat enemies, but I can't speak to specifics, so we'll pass on that one.
It's not Castlevania, guys.
Mm-hmm. Could be Sonic or Mario. was this made in Japan?
It's not part of a franchise, though.
It is part of a franchise.
Oh, it is part of a franchise. Okay.
Yeah.
Was this made in Japan? Yes.
Is this published by Nintendo?
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Is this part of the Mario series?
Tangentially.
I think it's Super Princess Peach.
Super Princess Peach or Wario something something.
Okay. Does this game star Wario?
Yes. That's 10.
There you go.
I don't know those games that well. Some of them definitely came out before 2000, right? Several of them. Most of them are on Game Boy.
Is this on the Wii?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, this game is called... Is this a platformer?
Yes.
All right, this game is called Wario...
What is it called? The Wii Wario game. I played it.
Yeah, I have it.
Also, I thought that game was 3D.
No. Yeah, it's like it's a 2D game. Like it's set on the you know, you go right to left in it and you explore.
What's that game called?
Man,
well,
it has a funny name because it sounds like it's going to be like a motion game or something. Like
is it just Wario World?
No, I don't think so. That's the name of the Virtual Boy game. So
I'm gonna cheat. I'm looking it up.
It's called Wario Tilt and Tumble or Rattle Around.
That's not the one I'm thinking of.
Mega Crunch or yeah, no, but it has a name like that. It has like a it's called Wario something something.
Oh, I was thinking of Wario World on the GameCube.
Yeah, that's not it.
The Wario one on the Wii is Wario Land Shake It.
Shake It. See, it has motion in it. I remember that. Yeah.
I was thinking of a completely different game. I was thinking of the
It's good.
Game.
And you go up to things and you shake the controller like this. It has motion controls in it. Is this Wario Land Shake It?
It sure is. But I don't think that counts because you guys cheated.
Yeah.
No, we should have talked about it before that.
We knew it was Wario Land on the Wii.
But you just didn't know the name.
But that also, Justin warned you that he was going to Google. You could have called it then. It's almost like you wanted us to cheat.
No,
I didn't we lost. But were you impressed that I got to the point that it was Wario something something, and it had motion controls mentioned in it?
Yeah.
But I I feel like I'm doing this a lot these days. But I'm going to send this one up to the commission.
Okay. Sure.
Because I think if you know the game, that's the spirit of the game. Just because you I can't like recall the actual title of the game.
Yep. I feel like that's pretty fair.
You can't know because you can't say, is it the Wario game on Wii? Like that wouldn't be.
But there's only one. That's the only one there is. There's no mistaking. Like the point of oral language is like communicating an idea from my head to yours. And you know what the game is if I've done that.
I think we did it. I think we did that out of our respect for the audience, because nobody wanted the 3 minutes more of Mind Palace that I would have had to go into that I was very, very on the edge of, but couldn't have gotten to.
What if it was God of War on PS4, but you couldn't remember the name? So you said, is it the game with Kratos on PS4?
Fine.
Would that be acceptable?
Yeah.
I think we've lost for that reason before.
Or if it's like the second, like, oh, it's the second Castlevania game. Like, I think it's fine.
Yeah, especially when you get into the granular titling.
The problem is that Justin was picturing a different game. That throws off our consensus.
Let's not bring up facts that deter from our win.
That's actually a very good point, where I literally was picturing a game that came out like 5 years earlier. I have fond memories of Wario World on the GameCube because I played that at my very first E3. Mm. And that game's not very good, not very memorable, but like 18-year-old me was like, I'm playing a video game before it comes out. Yeah, this is amazing.
Sure. There's a developer next to me who made it. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Okay, well, we'll run that one up to the commission, which are the viewers and the listeners. So let us know in the comments. Let us know in the Facebook group if you guys think that was a legitimate win or not. But thank you for the suggestion, Jabari from Minneapolis. That is all the scoops that we have for you this week. Who knows? Maybe next week we'll be talking about the price and release date for PlayStation 5.
We'll definitely be keeping that snow question. I'll tell you that much.
Snow question's a good one. Yeah. I actually never played that game, so I had to look up if there was a snow level in it.
We saw that. We waited.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying that's why I had to look it up.
I played it, Damon.
Yeah, we wait for you.
Do you want me to just say I don't know? Anyway, thank you, Justin. Sometimes thank you, Tina. Thank you, Sam. Thank you to Borba working from behind the scenes. My name is Damon. This is IGN Game Scoop, and we're out.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. And sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues. And it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.